Are you a small business owner looking to refresh your brand copy, perhaps in the form of your website bio, blog posts, or general online content? If you are, then you need to download my free resource, 10 Things I Learned from Getting Paid to Watch TV. This is a collection of some of my best writing tips and tricks, all of which I learned from covering television. As an added bonus, you'll be automatically subscribed to my email list where you can learn more about my writing services and receive weekly updates about my podcast, Emotional Abuse is Real. Head over to the link in the show notes to grab 10 Things I Learned from Getting Paid to Watch TV today. Trigger warning. This podcast episode features discussions of emotional abuse, physical abuse, and suicide. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Emotional Abuse is Real. I'm your host, Serene Leeds. I'm a professional writer and storyteller, and I'm so glad you're here. My guest today is an emotional abuse survivor named Kat. She has bravely come on the podcast to share her story as not only part of her own healing journey, but as a way to help others looking for a path forward after abuse. As always, before we get into the episode, I have a few quick announcements. Please make sure you're following me on Instagram at Serene Leeds Writes. That's SareneLeedsWrites. And that you're subscribed to this podcast on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on YouTube. Also, don't forget to support Emotional Abuse is Real by leaving a 5-star rating and by writing a review over on Apple Podcasts. Finally, if you're interested in being a guest on Emotional Abuse is Real, you can always either DM me on Instagram, email me at hello@sareneleedsrights.com, or you can fill out my quick and simple application form. I've left links to my Instagram, email, the show's application form, and my free download in the show notes. On today's episode, I chat with Kat, a woman who, despite leaving her emotionally abusive partner, is still navigating the rough waters of co-parenting her young daughter with a narcissist. Kat credits this podcast, which she discovered on YouTube, as well as online support groups with helping her find the courage to end her destructive relationship. I am so grateful to Kat for her kind words about the podcast, and more importantly, for sharing her story in such a public forum for the first time. Please note that the name Kat is a pseudonym to protect her privacy. So, without further ado, here's my conversation with Kat.
Yeah, so my story is still ongoing. Mm-hmm. However, it started, I would say, maybe about 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. I am currently co-parenting with this person, or trying to, parallel parenting, as I hear it's called. But I met this individual. So him and I have a baby together. Mm-hmm. She's 3.5 now. Mm-hmm. But I met this individual years and years ago, and I've known who he was for a long time. He mm-hmm. is about 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So I think that becomes important a little bit in this story, just with the lack of experience and things mm-hmm. like that. And people did not really have nice things to say about this person in general. He had kind of a rough exterior and reputation. But he hit me with the love bombing. Mm-hmm. I was on my way out of a okay relationship, but I wasn't that happy in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And he just laid it on me, constantly calling me, texting me, telling me all the things that my ex-boyfriend was doing that I didn't deserve, and I deserve so much better. Mm-hmm. So anyways, long story short, he ends up moving with me. And at the time, I didn't know he was moving in. It was one of those things where he all of a sudden his PlayStation's there. And then I'm noticing there's more clothes there. And then one day he comes for the weekend and he just tells me he's not leaving and he quit his job. And I was very anxious about that. Yeah. But
that's weird.
Yeah, it's very weird. Yeah. It is. And I knew it was weird.
Yeah.
But it ended up turning into one of those things like, what, you're not excited? I mean, we have such a good thing going on. So I was, you know, hesitant to say, no, this actually feels really creepy. But
yeah.
Anyways, so he moves in and he also had quit his job, like I said, to come move with me and be with me. Uh-huh. So he's doing all these things around the house, taking care of the house. And then about a month or two later, things start heating up now that he's in. He's starting to look for a job. And he would just, anytime I would go out with my friends or family, he would never overtly say he didn't want me to go there, but it would be like silent treatment or just attitude. And, you know, that's hard to live with in your own house.
Of course.
So I noticed myself just kind of complying, even though I really didn't want to. And I hadn't told my friends or family that this person was living with me because I had just gotten out of a long-term relationship. And I honestly knew it wasn't the best thing to do.
Yeah. So you did not need their judgment.
No, I was already judging myself.
Sure.
And I think that is also an important factor in this whole story.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, you know, you're hiding it because you know that you're wrong. And then I don't even remember. It might have been 8 months in. Finally, my friend was like, why can't I come over to your apartment?
Yeah.
So I let her come over and, you know, she knew I had kind of had a little thing going with him, but red flags everywhere. My friends were like, oh my gosh, like what is going on? So I just kind of pulled away and pulled away and pulled away. It would be like popping up at my job to bring me lunch. So he said, and really just to check on me.
Mm-hmm.
And cleaning my house, but really just snooping, things like that.
Sure.
It ended up getting physical pretty quickly, actually. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we were kind of drinking a lot together.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for me to determine, am I at fault? And, you know, do I remember this correctly? And of course, his account of it was always that I started it or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Yeah. So I tried to actually shake him off. I moved apartments when my lease was up and basically told him that I was going to move in with one of my friends, blah, blah, blah. He needed to find somewhere to go. So he goes and he stays with somebody. And then he had something to bring back to me and he said he was going to leave it at the door. So I waited like 3 hours before I opened the door. I open the door and he comes from around the corner. Mm-hmm. He was waiting there for hours to see when. Yeah. Yeah.
So creepy. I mean, so I know it's creepy. Easy. It's easy for us to say that now, but
looking back, I'm like, it's almost mind blowing that I wasn't creeped out more than I was. But
right. Sure. Yeah, I was the same way with my boss. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually, I'll get to the job thing too, because there's another layer of this story that's kind of relevant to the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyways, he leaves his stuff and he kind of's like, oh, I thought you were living with your friend, because he could see in my apartment, like there's no friend. It's the studio.
Yeah.
It's actually not even an apartment. It's a studio.
Yeah.
So he weasels his way back in. Physical stuff keeps going on. Horrible, horrible name calling. And, you know, I'm a whore. I'm a bitch. I'm everything under the sun.
Sure.
Some traumatic things that I had told him about my childhood he would bring up and throw in my face.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had struggled with some eating disorder stuff when I was in my teen years. He was always saying things about my body, which he had never said before he knew that. That I had an eating disorder. So I started losing a lot of weight with him and just not taking care of myself. And these people have a really unique way of just being so vindictive, but sneaky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think
it's
that's
so
part
true.
Of the charm a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
I have 3 degrees all in human services, psych.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know people like this existed, like even working in mental hospitals.
Sure.
I spent 10 years working in mental health and I had no idea like the nature of this.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's why we're talking about it. That's why it doesn't matter. Because you've listened to the podcast. I've had plenty of professionals on who they were like, well, I thought I was educated. I thought I knew better. Yes. And no, it's the best word is insidious.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, you always think I was very much like one of those people. This will never happen to me. I was one of those girls that would look at women in abusive relationships, especially children, and think of them as weak and how can you not leave? And then I found myself sitting in the same position.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we lived together a few more years. Same thing. Got more and more violent. He ended up being charged with domestic violence from a neighbor calling. And honestly, the physical stuff wasn't, I kind of moved on past that. It didn't bother me as much as I thought. It's the mental stuff.
Oh, you are not the first person on this podcast to say that. I feel that. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I always say that in many ways, what hurt more was the lack of support from my coworkers than the actual emotional abuse from my boss.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that is the thing too. It's like, that's why I think a lot of people keep their story so hidden because when you tell people, it's almost like they shame you. Like, well, why don't you leave? Or why wouldn't you just quit? Hello.
Yes.
You know, and it's never that easy. And these people get their claws enriched in you. And it's like, for me to walk away, I had to worry about, he knows where I work. He knows what kind of car I have. You know, it's, you don't know what these people will do. And, you know, they go to great lengths to ruin your life if you're not compliant or if you call them out.
Exactly.
But anyways, he gets arrested for domestic violence and I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. He threw a bunch of my belongings outside, broke them, stuff that had been in my family for years. I'm done. Find out I'm pregnant. And I was so, I can't even describe, I'm sure anybody that you've talked to or that's listened to the podcast understands the level of like depression that you have that you don't even know. I didn't even notice. I was missing a period, you know, it was like you just get up and try to get through the day every day.
Yeah. You're in survival mode.
Exactly.
So of course, it's very rare that you are going to hear me on this podcast react to anything that anyone tells me like, oh my God, like that's why I'm so calm. It doesn't mean that I don't care. It's because I get it. And the reason why I'm doing this podcast is because it's more common than people want to believe.
Yes. And that is ultimately why I ended up getting so into these podcasts and these YouTubes, because it offers some kind of validation, really.
That's absolutely. That was one of my core missions with this podcast, because I never got the validation.
Absolutely. And by having all these things happen, you know, here I am pregnant, COVID had just hit immediately. Sure. So my job closed. I didn't have a job anymore. I didn't. I mean, I didn't want to be with him, but my parents don't know what's going on. My friends already have distanced and I distanced myself. So I'm very isolated. I'm ashamed. And now I have a baby and no job. So he starts acting like a nice guy again. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't really have a lot of other options anyways. So I stay and throughout the whole pregnancy, same. It was a lot of triangulation with other women and talking about people's bodies and very flirty. Mind you, I'm pregnant and, you know, so
and he's doing this.
Absolutely. So it just spiraled into this deep, deep, deep depression. And when I had my daughter, I remember just even his attitude in the hospital was very like, it was about him, you know, it was about how inconvenienced he was, how tired he was. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this is supposed to be one of the happiest moments of my life. And I'm like, here we go. This is going to be really, really hard. So I knew that, but, things, I mean, I had seen signs of him cheating and it's all, you can't even talk to these people. Like I'm very much, I try to talk. I don't like to have confrontation, but I don't like things to linger. So anytime I would try to sit down and say, listen, I just want to be on the same page. Like we have a child now. You get abused more when you do that. It's like you leave feeling worse when you just came to resolve something. So we have a little baby and I'm trying to talk to you about, you know, why is this girl that you work with calling in the middle of the night or why this, why that? And then you storm out, you scream at me and I'm stuck here with I'm crying, a baby's crying. So I learned that, okay, this isn't going to work. I can't talk to him. I'm actually scared to talk to him, and not even physical danger, but because of what it does to your emotional state.
Yeah.
I wasn't scared of him physically. Like, it was more of, I knew how that would make me spiral with what he said, or just how I would be ruminating about these things for months and just would lead me to be more depressed.
Good on you for being so self-aware.
Now,
yes. Yeah. But even still, I feel like I know I became very self-aware many, many, many years ago, but I'm not quite sure when that happened. Yeah. And I fear that I wouldn't have known what to do in those kinds of situations prior to that self-awareness. Yeah.
And honestly, I joined a Facebook group about narcissistic abuse. And even though I had been in mental health forever, I still didn't click.
Yeah.
Right. And then finally I'm sitting there with like a 6 month old baby and I don't even recognize myself. I looked horrible. Yep. Wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't physically afraid to leave, but again, these people have a way of, like, you know that they'll attempt to ruin your life.
Yeah.
You know that. And that's where the fear is.
Absolutely.
So even before I had a baby, I was scared to leave because I'm like, he's going to ruin my life. I don't know how. I don't know when. I don't know where. But it's that lingering fear of they're going to do something so bad that you can't recover from it. So I joined the group and started, I mean, I stayed up like two nights in a row when he would fall asleep and would just read and read. And I was like, oh my God, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the problem. So I, I finally understood.
So validating, right? Yeah.
Yes. And that was what I needed so bad because when you're going through it, you think like, this can't be real. Like I have to be crazy. Like they say, I'm crazy. No one could possibly understand this. And then there's all this information and you say, oh, lots of people understand it.
Yeah.
So I actually look back on those posts in the group sometimes. And I just like, wow, just because I posted in there and I can see the progression of me getting it and things like that. But, so the groups and just YouTube started getting on YouTube and it started to click. This is what's going on. This is what's going on. It took me about 6 months of playing those things over every day. I was a stay-at-home mom all day. Yeah. It was playing, which I know I'm in therapy now. And I know that that's a little bit like obsessive, but you got to figure it out.
No, you needed that time to figure it out. And if it only took you 6 months, that's very good to hear because I know people – they're still in it and it's been years. Yeah. So,
Yeah. And I used to be a research assistant. So I'm very like scientific and hard fact oriented. So these people function in the gray, right? And I'm looking for black and white.
Absolutely. That's what I always say about my boss. He was the gray area. And that's why I never had any support. No one would ever hold him accountable because that nothing he did was that black or white. It was all in the gray area. It was all like, okay, you can get over that. That's not a big deal. Oh, just develop a thicker skin. And it took me years until I was like, no, none of that was acceptable.
Well, and then when you even try to explain it to people, I remember even thinking like, I'm going to explain it, which I actually did later in court, but it's hard because they know, don't put it in writing. They know, don't say this in front of other people. They know the game, like they've been playing it, right?
Yeah.
So I move out finally with the support of my online community.
So great. Was there like a moment that, you know, made you realize I've got to do this? Or was it just from having that support of the online community and validation?
Yeah, I think the support and validation without that, I probably would still be there. However, it got creepier and creepier.
Okay.
And now that I had a baby involved, it was like, if I can't do this for me, I've at least got to do it for her. So there was a point where he would just assault me my character verbally over and over and over. And it's like, I saw his phone light come on after he just ripped me for trash. Basically, I'm nothing. I'm horrible. And then I saw his phone light come on and I realized he had set all this up where he was going to just talk about me horribly and say anything, talk about my mom, my mothering, my family, mental health things, anything I had told him that was traumatic. And he went to record my reaction.
Hey, listeners out there, do you like podcasts with cute couples?
And talking about relationship vibes?
Well, take a listen to our podcast, because we've been together for 35 plus years.
And we're old as shit. No, I'm just kidding. That's right. From high school sweethearts to recent empty nesters.
We talk about all the topics of a good relationship.
And we do it with relatability and humor.
That's right. So listen to Dan and Grace, the cosmic couple, on our podcast.
You know, I hear these stories about these people doing that, and it's just so disgusting.
Well, and it shows you how much thought they put into actually being abusive, right? Because I was really stuck for a while with the, is he trying to do this, or is he just an asshole and doesn't realize it? And that was the moment where I saw that phone light cut on and, you know, adding in the other females. He wanted me to leave and finally had another option.
So typical.
He thought about it.
So he's not the bad guy. You're the one who was having problems. You wanted to leave. Right. Yep. Sure. Yep.
And he ended up playing that anyways after I left. I left and, you know, I left my family and took my daughter with me and I ripped our family apart and, you know, I went to back to being a bartender two nights a week just to leave.
Sure.
This is in the middle of COVID. My job had closed. I hadn't been a bartender for 10 years, but just to be able to leave. So for someone to play victim and say, I just wanted to leave my family to be a whore. I ended up moving in with a friend as a roommate with my child. I've never had a roommate in my life. This is my first time with a baby. And I didn't have any money. So it's like the audacity of someone to say, I did this to be happy and to go be a whore. It's insane.
Especially considering how, you know, you are the brave one here. You are the one who is saving yourself and saving your child.
Yeah.
And they, of course, can't see that.
No. And I think they do. And I think that's why they put so much effort into tearing you down, because I think in the back of his head, he knows that I really think he wanted me to kill myself. I'm not kidding. Because there were points that I was like not bathing and I ended up going to see somebody about medication. And he knew all this, and it would just like make the abuse worse and worse and worse. So and I used to think that there's no way someone would function like that. But after knowing what I know about him now, it's I don't doubt it at all. After I left and I'm working a part-time job, he did everything he could, not showing up to pick up time and stuff for me to lose my little two nights a week just to pay my bills job. Everything he could to try to ruin my life. He would constantly leave me voice messages, screaming at me, told me he hopes I get abused like I did him, which, right. Told me he hopes I get HIV from being a whore, like crazy overdose on drugs, all kinds of crazy stuff. And the really sad part is I thought when I finally started telling a little bit of it to my friends and family, I mean, their mouth is like, well, there's no way, like you're going to beat him with custody. There's no way. Like, listen to him. Like, this is scary. He's got a domestic violence charge. Like, that's not what happened.
No,
that's not what happened.
Okay. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I want to ask you, like, I don't know what you can share.
Please. So I ended up going, I filed and he puts this big long thing about me on Facebook, like saying that basically he hopes I die. And unfortunately that's not an option for him. My aunt screenshotted it and sent it to me. I took that to court. My lawyer requested a guardian ad litem. I took about 100 voice messages of him threatening me, calling me every name in the book with my child crying in the background in his care. He's leaving these for her. And the guardian ad litem bought his bullshit. Seriously. she very much said that this is a thing between him and I. This does not affect his ability to be a father. And I was like, wow. Because the domestic violence charge happened when I was pregnant, by the way. But yeah.
So unfortunately, yeah. I've talked about this on the podcast before. You know, none of these stories surprise me. One of my favorite episodes of the podcast, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it, it's with two family law attorneys. Please do, because they talk about all of this. This is what they specialize in, and they have a lot of resources on their website as well. Yeah.
Well, and I think that is the most heartbreaking thing. And I'm going to get to the job thing in a second too, but I think that's the most heartbreaking thing. If you're going to the appropriate channels, he's been charged. I have a lawyer, a domestic violence lawyer. Mm-hmm, I have a guardian ad litem involved, and nothing, they still gave us 50-50, right? So, and then, you know, with a job, he would constantly get fired from his jobs when there was a woman that was his boss. And I can remember him calling her like a whore and just talking so bad. And I remember even then being like, I haven't heard one thing that she deserves this kind of talk about, you know?
Yeah.
And I would even just hear, little implications that he was trying to do things to get back at her at work, like anything he could do to get her in trouble. Mm-hmm. And he would end up getting fired when it was a woman. He had a lot of problems in the workplace and it was only with women. Mm-hmm. But I also would feel some ways so upset because here I was working at a bar and he would get these great jobs and people, everyone around him would just be like so grateful to have him there. Like he's such a hard worker. He's such a this. He'd get all these perks.
Yeah.
And then until about the fourth job, I realized, okay, some people get it.
Right. Exactly.
When they're a woman and above him and get that kind of treatment, they get it. But
exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just like shocking to see how many people buy into this, whether it's at work or whether it's the court. And honestly, that was the hardest for me to deal with. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I lost my faith in humanity.
Oh, I get that. I get that so much because it's like I said earlier, for me, it hurt more that my coworkers didn't support me.
Sure.
I was like, I could deal with the emotional abuse, but why are my coworkers just standing there?
Yeah.
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 I get
that. And honestly, it's almost like it's like a turning point for me. It's like when I realized that humans weren't as inherently good as I thought.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people knew about the way he treated me and they did nothing. The court did nothing. And this, even with court orders and stuff, I still get verbally abused. And you can, same with, I'm sure at work when people will say, well, why don't you go to HR?
Because HR doesn't help because that's not their job.
Right.
They're there to protect the company. I did go to HR.
Exactly. And just like people tell me, why don't you go to the court? Why don't you go to the police? I did. Mm-hmm. And then so then the repercussions of even speaking up, it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And people don't get that.
And this is why so many people don't want to speak up. And this is why I'm so grateful that you are here and that you are telling your story, because I truly believe that this is how we will change things.
Yes, yes.
Are you able to, because I do want to ask you, what is it like to co-parent with him? Because that's an angle that I don't feel like is explored enough at all, and certainly not on this podcast.
Yes.
And if you want to, you know, just tell me where everything stands right now.
Yeah.
Legally.
Honestly, it's absolutely miserable.
I'm sorry.
I know. And I wish I had better hope to give to people. And honestly, my biggest regret was not acting sooner when I had things that could have really caught him up better. So that would be my advice to people. If you have any physical thing that happens, or because what ended up happening is I had all these things from the court, right? But it was one of those, they're looking at me kind of like, well, why is this just being brought up now that we're in here for custody, which I can see that standpoint, but it's like, because I'm fighting for what matters to me. Right. Mm-hmm. But people almost don't take you seriously when you didn't act on those things. But I still, you know, every time she's in his care, I have horrible anxiety.
Sure.
I can't text a normal, hey, sunscreen's in the book bag, because my anxiety for what the response is I'm going to get is so, it's just so bad that I don't even want to text him, which sucks, but I'm in therapy finally.
Good.
Yeah. And honestly, after I left for about 2 years, I still just kind of floated through really numb, kind of not understanding what had happened.
Sure.
And I think that is the hardest part. Now, when you start understanding what has happened to you, you kind of come up with those why questions and why are people like this, or why, you know, again, I look at it as the point where I believed in humans and then the point where I stopped.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. I do believe one day that there will be something big enough to come that I will be able to go back to court, but it's even an uphill battle with that, because I went and told my story to people and they were like, well, it really has nothing to do with being a father. So it's hard. It's hard. And I would see people having issues with him at work a lot too. And I didn't think about it then, but people were quit before he would, and people with families to feed, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it gets so bad when you're working with or living with someone, you see them all the time. It makes your life like a literal hell, you know? Yeah. It's just, it's horrible.
It's, you know, I really hope that you can find a way to, you know, change this legally. Cause you said it's 50-50 custody right now. I had a friend who mentioned to me recently about how, it's really hard get like sole custody. And I am so sorry that you are going through this, but it's interesting what you said about telling people your story. One thing I have certainly learned is that you do have to ultimately tell your story to a lot of people, because it's true. Not everyone is going to be the support that you need, but you will eventually hit on those those correct people. So I am so grateful that you are here and that you are sharing with me. I want to ask how this podcast has helped you.
Yeah. So, and that is really why I wanted to even talk to you to begin with.
Thank you.
Without outlets like this that I started listening to, I mean, I don't even know if I'd be here today, honestly. And that's really sad to say, but when these people have that much of a hold on you, it really does affect you that bad. And just hearing other people's stories and reading their stories and then finding podcasts and YouTubes, it's like, okay, I'm not alone. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's exactly why I started this podcast. And thank you so much for saying that. I got a little choked up and I almost said your name. So, because when I went through my experience, it was 10 years ago, and I always share this. The only people who truly supported me were my husband and my therapist.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of things had to happen both in my life and in the culture for this to be more accepted. Yeah. And so now I'm so happy that I'm sharing the story, and that the fact that people are coming forward just means the world to me, because it validates me and I can help validate them. So, and I'm so happy that you are in therapy, because I do think that that's crucial, especially because I'm so happy that this podcast helps people and that Facebook groups help people. But since I'm not a mental health professional,
that is
a critical part of the puzzle. So what would you say to other people who are currently in emotional or narcissistic abuse relationships, and they don't know what that first step to take should be?
Yeah. And honestly, I think it, even outside of relationship, even a family member, a friend, anything, because this actually made me evaluate a lot of people in my life from a different perspective. But I think any time that you have that gut feeling about somebody, or any time that you feel like someone is intentionally hurting your feelings, you have to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is the only way I can really describe it, because it ends up taking you to a point where you're not strong enough to protect yourself. Right. Yeah. And then I reached out to domestic violence organizations and stuff. Mm-hmm. And thank God they helped me with the lawyer and all that. Good. But by that point, you almost don't have the strength anymore. You mm-hmm. need help. You need to lean on people. You need to have the support of people who get it. Mm-hmm. And I think hiding my life for so long really took a big toll on me and played a major part in the whole scenario, where when I saw these support groups and I would be talking to people that understood, it's kind of like you come out of the dark a little bit. It's like, hey, this is actually what's going on. But without having some kind of connection to people that understand, it almost feels like you're living in a nightmare every day. Like there's no way this is real. Yeah. I literally don't think I believed it until I heard other people. Mm-hmm. I really believed what he said about me, that I was crazy. Yeah. I really believed it. And it took listening to other people's stories for me to hear basically the same story that I'm telling over and over and over, whether it be their mom, whether it be a coworker, whether it be, it's the same pattern, right?
Yes.
So I think that was the most crucial point for me, honestly, and support. And I think listening to your gut, there were moments in the very, very beginning, like even that moving in thing, I would have said right there, no, you need to leave right now.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't listen to my gut.
Same here. I don't remember if I said it in my story episodes, but literally the first 2 days on the job at Rolling Stone, because there wasn't a lot going on, my boss was like, you want to go have coffee? And I should have known then.
You got that ick, right?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
And
I was like
a predator feeling. You feel like someone's like, you know, trying to attack you. And it's because they are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was like, I really don't want to have coffee with you. I'm really not interested.
Yes.
And I felt like I had to. And he was being like super friendly. And I was like, there's something off about this. Mm-hmm. And I just put it out of my mind because I was at Rolling Stone. What am I going to do? Mess up my dream job the first 2 days. Sure, but going back, I'm just like, no, all of it. No. Yeah.
And there's no really easy way to say it, because if somebody would have told me then, listen to your gut.
Exactly.
I would have been like, whatever. But it really is so important. And I read somewhere one time, someone said that your gut instinct is your survival instinct. Mm-hmm. It's your survival instinct telling you to run, right?
Yeah.
And that's why, if anything, I am thankful. I feel like I've avoided a lot of other hurtful people and hurtful situations by now listening to my gut. I think that is just the message. It's like, you know, you have to listen to your even your physical body. Like I remember even feeling like I had hair standing up on the back of my neck when he would do certain things. And that's real. You know, if you can't trust your mind, you feel your stomach hurts or you feel anxious, shaky. So I think that's ultimately, if you have that ick feeling or that feeling of like something's off, you have to listen to it.
Yeah, you do. And I just want to close out by saying that you are a wonderful mother.
Thank you.
For everything that you are doing.
Thank you.
I have no doubt that you love your daughter and that you're doing everything that you can to keep her safe. And when we finish recording here, I will send you the link to that episode
with
the family law attorneys, because they are fantastic.
Awesome.
So I just want to thank you so much for your bravery today, for sharing your story. Yes. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast and for finding my podcast and for listening to it.
Yes. And no, thank you. Without your podcast, I wouldn't have left, honestly.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for listening to my conversation with Kat on Emotional Abuse is Real.
If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, please don't hesitate to reach out via email at hello@sereneleadsrights.com, through Instagram at @sereneleadsrights, or fill out my guest application form. Please note that this podcast should not be used as a substitute for professional mental health services. If you are a victim of emotional abuse and need help, please call or text the Suicide and Crisis Hotline at 988. Or call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. You can also text START, START, to 88788. Once again, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Instagram, and go grab my free download, 10 Things I Learned from Getting Paid to Watch TV. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.